Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 76. And Dave, we have our Super Bowl contenders taking place in Minnesota about 2 weeks from today. The New England Patriots representing the AFC and the Philadelphia Eagles representing the NFC. I think for a lot of Steeler fans, it's click, the NFL season's over.
Yeah, this is probably not ideal for Pittsburgh sports fans and some people yesterday when I threw that out there saying that this was probably a kick to the boys, if you will, with these two facing each other. So a few people, you know, responded, well, why is that? You know, Philadelphia's in the state. Well, you know, if you're a Penguins fan, you know, you hate Flyers fans, and most Flyers fans are more than likely fans of the Eagles. So, you can't have anything like that bringing them joy. And and obviously with the Patriots there. So, yeah, a rematch of Super Bowl. What was it, David?
39.
That's the one where T.O. had to battle back, I think, from an injury to get to play in that game. Donovan McNabb, the infamous throw up in the huddle incident with him. I might go back and rewatch that game this week, David. It seems like it was a fairly close game, or the Eagles made it close at the end there, but obviously the Patriots won that. And rematch of that. And well, let's talk a little bit how each team got there.
Yeah, you know, a couple people in the media have asked, you know, why there's animosity between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and you pointed out the hockey stuff. Look, I'll tell you something. This is my personal experience, and you know, your mileage may vary, but having been to sporting events in Philadelphia, I've never look. I've been to them in New York and in New England, and hockey and football and baseball, and you know, all over the country, and never felt. Saw somebody. So I was with a woman who was completely mistreated, and the behavior was unbelievable. And yeah, I wear actually feel for your safety when you're not doing anything, not wearing gear, not you know nothing. That's some of it. And if you saw the stuff on the internet with the Eagles fans interacting with the Viking fans or whatever, it's look. I am not painting Pittsburgh as a rose garden of welcoming, opposing fans. Most places aren't, but it's the length that or the effort that Philly fans sometimes go to because you know things get hostile. So you can debate whether it's idiotic to wear a jersey to another team's game and that type of stuff. But my God, nobody should have to fear for their safety going to a sporting event. And you know sometimes that is the case. So okay, enough with the moralizing BS. The games, Dave. Let's talk about the Patriots game first and the Jags. And let's get the complaints out of the way. If you're a conspiracy theorist, or if you think that in whatever way, shape, or form, the Patriots are going to get the calls and things are going to go their way, so that they are guaranteed to be in the Super Bowl, you had a couple things to lean on. One is, again, only one penalty call against the Patriots, and one of the guys from Football Outsiders did some research on this and found that no team in history has had fewer games with no more than 10 penalty yards. And in fact, the Patriots have had 5 of those in their last 10 games, and nobody's had more than 2. And that, you know, so the Patriots no penalty calls, and then the Miles Jack play, which to me happened so fast it was tough to see. But if they don't blow a whistle, there's a chance. You would have to review this 100 more times, and maybe the call stands as is. But there is a chance that's returned for a touchdown, and the Jags go up 27-10, and the Patriots came back for more than that in the Super Bowl. But, you know, those would be the two things you point to if you're a conspiracy theorist, Dave.
Yeah, the penalty thing, man, it's hard to imagine. It seemed like I called out one holding call during a play that wasn't called. I think that was in the first half there. It's hard to imagine that one team, you know, only gets one penalty for 10 yards, you know. It's okay if you're not calling them on the other team. And look, even the pass interference on who was it, Bouye, later in the game there, that looked kind of, you know, I mean, look where the ball ended up and all like that. Yeah. Was there a need for that much of much contact by Bouye, being as how he had the sideline as the extra defender there? To me, he had done a great job of pretty much running. Who was it? Cooks, I think. Out of bounds there. I thought it was kind of considering. All things considered, I thought it was a ticky-tack call when it comes to Bouye there. But yeah, one.
As we both mentioned at the time, though, live without seeing the replay. You really felt like Bouye didn't have to do that. He could have just run his line, and the ball wouldn't have been complete. But, yes, I agree with what you said.
Yeah, and let's see. What else was there? Oh, yeah. You know, just overall, it's hard to believe that the Patriots only committed one penalty for I mean, let's face it, you could call holding on every snap in the NFL there. So you would think these things, you know, we see it in hockey all the time, David, and you know, I of course come from a town where there's a minor league hockey team, and it was evident at times where things were kind of being evened up, if you will, and we know it happens, and you would think at some point during the game those calls would have even in an NFL game would even out a little bit, if you will.
For sure. So okay, that's the Jags side of things. Now I think what was so impressive, obviously, was the Jags in the first half, their opening drive, and then the next two, their opening drive they didn't score. The next two. They go right down the field, and it's a fair bit of smash mouth football. And Tony Romo was excited about the play calling and what they were doing, but you know, it was play action passes and a dose of Fournette and some little screen passes to the back whose name's what's his name is David, the kid from escaping me, but he had three catches on the season for I think 48 yards.
Oh, Corey Grant.
Yeah, Corey Grant, three catches in this one for 59 yards, and he showed some, you know, blazing speed around the edge, and the Jags, you know, were able to hammer the football up the middle. Their offensive line doing things right, Bortles making the right reads essentially, and the thing that I mentioned was David's 14-10 at halftime, and that did not represent how much the Jags dominated the game, because they get the two plays, the Gronk injury play and the pass interference call, and go down the field in 40 seconds and get that late touchdown. And it just, you know, you just felt like for all the work the Jags had done, that was closer than you'd wanted it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, they obviously did play well in the first half, and they were converting. Well, one thing that caught my eye, they were converting some third downs in which they were throwing short of the chains. You know, you know, shame on the Patriots there. They were missed. The Patriots defense wasn't great tackling, especially in third down situations. And I'm trying to pull up the third down. 5 of 9, the Jaguars were on third downs in the first half, while the Patriots were just, 4 of 6, the Jaguars were in the first half on third downs, while the Patriots were 0-5. So they were trending and doing all the right things. Let's say that the Dolphins did right in that game earlier, outside of not getting the turnover there. Fournette had the 40 yards rushing, I think, in the first half. They had Yeldon had 22 yards, and as you mentioned, you had a kid in Grant that had three receptions for 59 yards, and we never saw Corey Grant after that.
Never before. Saw him. Never you know, saw him.
After that point there. The drive with the two penalties by the Patriots, obviously to close out the half, were huge because, and look, even back it up even further, the Jaguars missed a golden opportunity to milk some time off the clock, right? Right before the 2 minute warning.
Yeah, you know, you need to play a perfect game sometimes to win, and little mistakes, well, that won't be talked about much because you don't know, but the Jags did punt with a running clock with 2:08 left or 2:06 left when they kicked the ball, and the Patriots got it at 2:02, so you give them an opportunity. Now, they scored so quickly, there was still time on the clock, and we'll get to what the Jags did with that. But again, it's just not a heady play. Again, I'm not suggesting in any way it was a determining factor. It's just you got to do all the little things right, so that's why we point them out.
Right. They punted, I think, with 2:09, and then obviously that gives the Patriots the extra timeout. Now, not that they did anything with it. They ran Deion Lewis off right guard for 2 yards, so whoopee, you know. But
if they run that play and it's, you know, a running clock, that's 30 seconds or 20 seconds, and instead it was 4 seconds.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you can't expect. Now, granted, I think if the way things transpired with the hit on Barry Church on Gronkowski, which, I mean, yeah, it was an illegal hit, but I mean, I hate to talk injuries and talk trade-offs, but, you know, at that point, you know, you're thinking, man, they just knocked Rob Gronkowski out of the game, and Tom Brady has not, you know, and the rest of that offense has not been playing their A game. But, I mean, then it was back-to-back penalties. You had the 15-yarder for the unnecessary roughness, and then you had something like 30 yards on that deep pass interference call from, you know, from Brady to Cooks on Bouye there, and then then they waltz on in, and then you turn around and there's still like 55 seconds left on the clock. Boy, why do you kneel there? Wasn't there some NFL operations or some account tweeted that that's the first time all season, I think, that a team has taken a knee with that much time left in the first half, 55 seconds?
Yes, they did. They said no team had gone to the half with two timeouts and more than 50 seconds left. Now, I have to say, this is one of those things where I didn't get worked up about this because the Jags aren't really a quick strike offense with a lot of threats. Now, should you take one shot there? Maybe. And obviously, in hindsight, that seems to be the way to go. But I will say, when I watched that, and I even tweeted that, I said it'd be interesting to see if they take a knee here. You know, they didn't get it by getting big chunk plays down the field. So it felt like, are you going to run Fournette into the line? Are you going to throw a little screen pass? Sure, you can do those things, and maybe you get lucky and get a break. You know, the Steelers had a couple series where in 30 seconds they were able to move the ball. But I just didn't think it was a bad move with Blake Bortles and that offense.
I think I posted on Twitter, do you think the Steelers would take a knee in that situation? I mean, look, and wasn't it the Patriots?
But they are a big strike offense. I mean, that's what they do.
Right, but look at how they did it. And in fact, against the Patriots, even, right? Didn't they have Juju on the crossing pattern, and then he turns upfield, and lo and behold, off to the races he goes. So just because you're not considered a quick strike offense, and you know, doesn't mean that you still can't take a chance there. Run a high percentage play or two on a crossing pattern, and then, you know, maybe if you get in a third, maybe take a shot deep because you can get a pass interference call or something, and maybe you get yourself in field goal range. So I absolutely look. I mean, were the chances of them doing something with it likely? No, but I'm doing something other than kneeling it out.
Yeah, okay, so second half. The Gronk penalty, yeah, it was a helmet-to-helmet hit. I don't know, I know at the time in live motion, a lot of people questioned things, and if you didn't see it was clear helmet-to-helmet in slow motion, I get it, but it was, right? No issues there.
Right. No issue with the flag or whatnot, and he's going to get fined, as well. But, I mean, and then Richard Sherman's chiming out while he go for his knees there. Look, it's all bang-bang, and I feel for defensive backs, David, because it all happens so quickly in front of him, but You just got to lower the target, man. And Rob Gronkowski's a big target.
And look, this goes back to, and Sherman, this goes back to the whole idea. If you go low, you're a dirty player, and low's legal. And he can, you know, if Rob Gronkowski comes off the field, and this is the crazy thing to have to ask a player, you know, would you rather have a concussion or would you rather have a torn ACL? Well, you know, I understand the initial reaction of I'd rather have a concussion because maybe I'm good in a day or two. And if I got a torn ACL, I'm not good for 9 months. And so I get that reaction. But the other thing is, you know, you're going to be, you know, using your brain the rest of your life. And you can, if you can walk, you can probably get by in most of the things you need to do. But if you, you know, if you go through some of the CTE things, your life's ruined. So it's one of the very tough things about football, period.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, he sure, for, you know, for him not to return to that game, he was probably not, you know, pretty.
He didn't get the choice. Not his choice, right?
Yeah. He was knocked pretty good there. But on to the second half there, and look, the Jaguars once again opened up and was able to move the football a little bit. Now they, of course, you know, ultimately stalled out there, and good on Josh Lambeau to people are nailing these 51, 52, 53 yarders, 54 yarders like it's nothing nowadays, David. It probably
and we saw Chris Boswell do it too. I mean, it is standard procedure now. You know, kind of as you say, 52, 53 in. It's never an issue of length unless you have extreme weather conditions.
Yeah, I think I wrote on Twitter at the time, I'm not so sure I would have lived in my fears there. You know, midfield and the Patriots already having a little bit of momentum, you know, if you will. But, okay, they get the field goal and you know, they're back in business there. And then, you know, from that point forward, even, you know, well, really that drive as well, too. Now, they sort of tried to get away from a few of the things that made their offense, I think, successful in the first half there. And, you know, Bortles, you know, I think, was a 50% thrower from that point forward. I don't think they were as sharp on third downs there. It's almost like they were trying to, you know, hide their offense at that point and think that maybe their defense was going to be able to, you know, pull this thing out, even though they did get another field goal with you know, time running out there or just started the fourth quarter. Even at that point, David, at 20-10, I did not feel they were safe.
Let me ask you a question, and this is straight hindsight. We've seen what New England can do, and you know what you do when you're the Jags. And, you know, I was talking to somebody after the game. He said, even when you're up 10 or whatever you're up, you have to play like you're down 14. You can argue about some of the calls maybe Mercedes Lewis didn't get on interference calls against the Patriots, whatever. The with 10 minutes left in the game, up 20-10, the Jags had a 4th-and-1 on their own 42. If you had I think anybody was suggesting that they go for it at the time. If you had a chance to go again, I mean, obviously, if you knew the outcome would be what it was, you'd probably play things differently. But do you have to approach a game unconventionally against this Patriots team in Foxborough and those types of situations, or you just keep doing what you're doing and hope you execute better or hope things go your way? I mean, is there anything that Doug Marrone could have done differently, even with the benefit of hindsight?
Man, I did a study, a stat study. I think I can't remember if it was last season or the season before, talking about what it takes to beat the Patriots. And generally, I time of possession was one thing that has to be lopsided, and then obviously when it came to points, I think the average was something like 22 or 23 points, something along those lines. And what that is, that's going back and looking through all the losses Tom Brady has had during his career, and what the statistical factors and all were. Now, is that going to hold true to every situation? No, you're just trying to find, you know, a generality there.
The Patriots offense has been good enough that 20 points isn't generally going to do it.
Right, exactly. 23-24, though, has. So that's one element there. So when you're looking and you've got the 20, I the short answer to your question, I think, is yes. You have to, not only do you have to do things perfect, near perfect in all situations in that game, you have to make sure that you know, the longer that you can keep the football out of Tom Brady's hands, the better. And then you still need those points. I mean, because 20 points just not going to be enough to beat Tom Brady. So yeah, I think you have to consider, you know, ahead. When was that fourth and it was a fourth and two, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, on the game book, it's fourth and one. They got that 7 yard gain when they needed eight. And there were
12-11 left. I'm looking at it here now. Yeah, that's probably a bit early, David. But man, how far are you away from field goal range at that point? Another. Let's see. Let's say you get the 1 yard there, you're at your own 42. You need what, another 15 yards, I guess, 18 yards maybe to get in field goal range.
Yeah, you got to get a couple more first downs, yeah. But you also shorten the game if you keep the ball. There, a point enough, right?
Well, the thing is, at least they got Amendola to fair catch it, but it ended up putting New England at a disadvantage field position wise. So, it's hard to go back through these things and, you know, knowing the outcome and, of course, second guessing them, but. Yeah, I think you do, because here's the thing, and I forget if Berman or whoever it was on primetime last night were reviewing the game and talking about, you know, you have to do things probably unconventionally to the fact that because the Patriots know that they're going to win the game, you know. If they're two scores down, you know, and 10 points down at a time, you know, you just got to keep, you got to cut the head off the snake, David, to kill it, you know.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. Look, they, you know, the flip side is here, this is a really good Jags defense that the Steelers took apart. And, you know, the Pats, you have a game where the Pats are down 10 facing a 3rd and 18. I mean, this is go back to the Ravens defense. What should that Ravens defense of 2017 be known for? Not that they were great all season and, you know, so stout. They'll be known for the fact that when it mattered on 4th and 12, they lost the season for them. And the Jags defense gave up a 3rd and 18 to Danny Amendola over the middle of the field. You can't let those plays happen and win games oftentimes. I mean, so, you know, they went right down the field. Amendola's the, you know, to me, the MVP. I mean, that play was monstrous. You know, the two touchdowns and, you know, the second one was a heck of an athletic catch to get his feet down. And then probably the under-talked-about punt return where, you know, I don't know exactly if he's yelling fire, but he's certainly waving guys off and then catches the punt and returns it 20 yards. That is a really heads-up smart play that, you know, it was, you know, you're down three now and you're in field goal range without having to run a play. You're at the 30-yard line. So I don't know if the Jags players let up a little bit when you hear the returner yelling fire. You start to stop and look for the ball and maybe see where it's going to bounce. But he's able to catch it on the run and go up that left sideline and, you know, Amendola was just – people talk about Edelman and missing him. Man, Amendola, he was great.
Yeah, he was. And, boy, you got him without Gronk. You got him without Edelman. I mean, it was – Amendola seemed like it was all they had. And obviously, Cook and boy, did Dorsett have a big play late in that game as well, too. 30-something yards as well. The thing is, when you play the Patriots, too, and you get into the fourth quarter, man, they've made so many adjustments and they've looked at so much of what you're doing defensively. You got to know that they're going to start figuring you out at one point, and that seemed to be exactly the case, you know, from there. And they just went on down the field, and a heck of a throw and catch by Amendola on that second touchdown there. And once they scored that, you know, once Amendola returned that punt, it was over. And
well, then, yeah, you knew the game was worse going to be tied there, and then okay.
And then the thing is what, two or three plays after Amendola returns that thing, Miles Jack went down injured. Did you even hear what his injury was?
No, he obviously we saw him in the cart with looking at his lower leg ankle. So,
and then
He came off without putting any weight on it. So you wonder if he busted his ankle.
Right, and then the very next play, Marcell Dareus goes down injured. And then two plays later, the Patriots are in the end zone, and it was over at that point.
Yeah, Bortles just missed that throw. Stephen Gilmore made a great play. Dede Westbrook got behind him a little bit, and Bortles stepped up in the pocket, saw it, tried to lay it out there, and Gilmore, did what he had to do. That was a really good play, really athletic play.
Yeah, and a couple plays before that, Bortles missed Fournette kind of on a wheel route.
Which I thought Tony Romo gave him a pass there that he shouldn't have. He put some air under that ball. I think, there's a chance to make a play. And, Fournette's effort, blah, blah, blah. Early on, Bortles missed some passes. He underthrew the wheel route early in that game to Yeldon, I think it was, where if he lays it out there, maybe it's a touchdown. I don't know if that was the first – that was the first drive, and they didn't get any points on that drive. He didn't play badly. I didn't think he was great. I think Romo was a little effusive in his praise. I thought he actually played as well or better against the Steelers than he did in this game. But this isn't on Blake Bortles. It's not on any of the Jags. They played a good game. They lost.
Are you tying your wagon to Blake Bortles?
That's a great question. What are my options? My options now, the Jags are going to pick, let's say they pick 29 or whatever the number is. If a developmental quarterback's sitting there, I'm probably taking him. If Lamar Jackson is sitting there and I love Lamar Jackson, I'm taking him. You're not going to get one of the top three or four guys clearly at 29. Do I make a move? Is he a free agent or what's his status?
They picked up his fifth year option. Which is this coming year now.
Yeah. I think I'm keeping him. Eli Manning sounds like he's staying in New York. Your question is, is an Alex Smith, is a Case Keenum going to be markedly better? I don't know if I had a chance to have Alex Smith and you keep, I don't think you can keep Blake Bortles around at that point. You probably have to say goodbye. He has made it a difficult question. I thought in the second half of the season, Blake Bortles played well for Blake Bortles. Now that's, I think average NFL quarterback play.
Well, here's what I think I do. I picked up that fifth year option and, obviously he's going to become guaranteed fairly soon here, right? By the start of the new league year, if memory serves me, but I let him play. He's my guy. I mean, how can he not be your guy right now for the 2018 season? And then he's got to earn the tag, I think, at that point. So you let him play, and if he plays well enough, then you tag him. So I think that's the way you treat Blake Bortles right now. I still would be leery signing him to unless he'd be willing to take one of those Andy Dalton deals. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. 2 years guaranteed and pay as you go.
Right. And, if he was willing to do that or one of those Colin Kaepernick, deals that really aren't as long as they seem.
Well, and that's what he's going to get. I don't think anybody's going to guarantee Blake Bortles, $100 million over 5 years.
Right. So, we'll see. He's earned the right to be their quarterback next season. I'll tell you that.
Okay. All right. So that wraps that one up.
It's got to be killing Steelers fans to listen to a podcast recapping the Jaguars Patriots like that.
Yeah, the Jags go three games without a turnover. And, think about the Steelers season, how the Steelers ended up where they did. They turned it over five times to the Jags. They turned it over to New England on the goal line in the most crucial play of the game. And after not getting a call, and then they turned it over two more times to the Jags and gave up, either seven directly and 14 within a play. Turnovers matter. Turnover, at the end of the day, turnovers matter. And in this one, there was only one turnover, and the Patriots defense held on that Jack turnover and got the ball back right away. But the Jags, the one thing about the Jags, they didn't kill themselves. And in the Steelers, you know, losses, you know, needless to say, turnovers were a huge part of it. The other game, Dave, I don't know what there is to say about it. The Vikings went right down the field in the opening drive, and if you're a wagering man at that point and you got to put money down, you'd say, okay, the Vikes in a blowout with Nick Foles at quarterback, and it went exactly the other way.
Yeah, boy, when the way the Vikings marched down the field there, I thought, yeah, it's on. They got them figured out this early. This is going to be a walk in the park for them. Boy, they never sniffed it even after that. Nick Foles, what a tremendous job of being able to push the football down the field against a good defense. You know, he really had some nice throws in that game, man. And you know, much like the Steelers against the Jaguars, I think a couple weeks ago, you know, you had to be able to take some shots, I think, if that's how you're going to beat that defense. And they were able to do that. And not only that, they were able to convert. The Eagles offense was able to convert third downs. I think they had 10 of 14 in that game. Their average gained 7.1 yards, and plus they were able to mix in enough rushing in there. I'm not a huge Jay Ajayi fan, you know that, but man, he can get loose a couple of times on you. You know, he had a I think one rush for about 16 yards and had another for 13 yards. And what about LeGarrette Blount, especially on that one touchdown of his, just you know, blowing through people there. And I talked about before the game that you look at both these lineups and especially the wide receivers and which one's the better team, and that's why I chose the Vikings with Diggs and Adam Thielen and all like that. But look at the ones that ended up making some plays for the Eagles. You had Alshon Jeffrey with 5 catches for 85 yards and 2 touchdowns, and Torrey Smith, who really I thought should have had one earlier in the game, hitting right in on the shoulder pad, a deep pass. He ended up with 5 for 69 and a touchdown. They weren't afraid, and even Nelson Aguilar chipped in 59 yards. They weren't afraid to run kind of the trick plays or anything in there. And Zach Ertz, boy, if you want what a nice tight end Zach Ertz is. 8 catches for 93 yards there. Once
and
again,
by the way, if you missed on the internet, one of the best things that you'll see is Zach Ertz, his wife, is a player on the U.S. women's national team. They had a game yesterday, a friendly, I think it was against Denmark, that they won 5-1, by the way, where she scored a goal. She's playing. It was the exact same time as the Eagle game. And so she didn't know what was going on and didn't want to be told until her game was over. And she gets the news, and she's in tears of joy. And they show Zach later, sees the video of her watching it. He tears up. And it's just a, you know, it's a really nice moment.
Yeah, great story. Tell it to Reader's Digest.
Hallmark card. Get a Hallmark card. Get a Hallmark card out.
No, I'm just kidding you. But, I mean, Nick, you look, yeah. How many times do we talk about it? You can't turn, you know, don't turn the football over. Don't turn the football over and get yourself some explosive plays. Well, the Vikings turned it over, twice, interceptions, and I think they had a fumble, and I think they had 3 turnovers in total there. You just can't win games. And what about that interception return, that pick 6 by Patrick Robinson?
Well, you can argue that was, you know, certainly that was – I thought Scott Van Pelt said it well last night. That lit the fuse at the link, as it was a great return by Robinson, and you know, he got some good blocks up there, and you know, the momentum changes. How about Chris Long changes teams, wants to play more? Probably would have played more had he stayed in New England, but he's going to the Super Bowl against New England, as is obviously LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah, a lot of side.
You know, we had that whole recap, and we didn't mention James Harrison.
No, we did not. I think a lot of people were, but look, James had a couple. I don't think he was officially credited with a sack in that game, was he, David?
No, but and he should, you know, he should get, maybe they'll review it, but he should get at least half a sack there. There were guys coming together. I don't know who exactly stripped the ball, but he was involved in the play that the strip sack happened.
I'm trying to look and see what he was credited for, any pressures or whatnot. Yeah, well, he was credited with 1 quarterback hit in that game, James Harrison was, and he had 3 total tackles in there. Look, nobody comes on me, and he's still got that one rip move of his. You know, and when you get in a down distance where you know that you can, you don't have to play the run. That's when James Harrison is at his best. You know, so yeah, I know it's eating a lot of Steelers fans up, and boy, it looked like, you know, the Pittsburgh media jumped back in after that. You know, I don't know how you feel all this time removed about it, David, but you know, should they have played James Harrison more? You know, more than, let's say, Bud Dupree on the other side?
They should have played him more, yes. Because you play him more, you can make more evaluation. I mean, you know, you play more, you get to earn your playing time. He didn't do anything not to deserve more playing time. I think that's a legit argument for Steeler fans. I mean, he was good at the end of last season, the 2016 season, arguably the Steelers' best outside linebacker. I mean, maybe not arguably, maybe clearly the Steelers' best outside linebacker. And the one time we see him at Kansas City, he plays okay. He's on the field in that Baltimore game. So, you know, in limited snaps, he makes a little bit happen. The other guys weren't making all that much happen. Now, if it's strictly, you know, again, it's more nuanced when you're talking about being in pass coverage and the defenses you want to kind of run. But, you know, the role of that position isn't necessarily to be in pass coverage all the time. It hasn't been historically. So unless it's a philosophical change defensively, which there's not necessarily a huge reason to believe that, even though TJ Watt gave you that opportunity, yeah, of course he should have played more.
You want to know something that'll get people fired up, David? I don't know if you even noticed this. Do you know what direction I'm about to go with James Harrison in that game yesterday against the Jaguars?
Go ahead. I don't.
James Harrison played 7 snaps on special teams.
I did not know that. Do you know if those were just like field goal block or, you know, extra point block and field goal block?
I thought he was on I thought I saw him on a field goal return team. I mean, on a punt return team, David. I can't. I'll have to go back. But that's boy, you want to talk about? I might end up doing a post on that because that would really turn the knife in. Because look, one of the biggest things, the reason James Harrison was inactive for a few games, I firmly believe, because it was a numbers game, because they did not, they'd rather have Arthur Motes out there on special teams than James Harrison. And, you know, it would be interesting. You know, I'm sure James Harrison, if it meant playing, getting some defensive snaps, I bet if you're the Steelers coaching staff, you would have went to him and said, look, you know, you're going to have to play some on, you know, field goal return team or punt return team punt return team in order to get a helmet. Are you willing to do that? I bet he would have said yes, right?
Now, he's not saying no.
Now, is James Harrison a guy that you want running down, covering punts, or, you know, on your own punt return team? Heck, I don't see an issue of him being a guy out there delivering some block
shots. Sure,
you know, heck, that might, you know, seeing that guy run at me might deter me a little bit. But that's something that I don't think that hardly anybody's going to talk about here. That, you know, he played 7 snaps on special teams in that game there. So, well, you know, it's spilt milk at this point, but he's going to the Super Bowl, and he played 32 total defensive snaps in that game yesterday, which was, you know, a little less than half, obviously, overall. So, yeah, he's going back to the Super Bowl, and, you know, he's talking. I think he talked like he maybe thinking about playing next year.
Well, he's going to get to pick his team.
Yep. Ain't many of them going to be out there. But
no.
I would assume the Steelers are off the books now.
Yeah, LeGarrette Blount and James Harrison matching up in the Super Bowl. So, okay, so that's the Super Bowl. We've talked a lot about Le'Veon Bell and what's going on. Mike DeCourcy wrote a good article in the Sporting News. If you get a chance to look at it, his thesis is move on from Bell. But as Dave has done, Mike looked also at successful runs. He highlighted the Jacksonville and New England games, and talked about, you know, I think one of the issues here with Le'Veon Bell is if you actually look at the numbers from the 2017 season, he wasn't productive from an efficiency standpoint. He was productive because he had a ton of touches. Now, you can look at a ton of touches as one of two things. He's durable and you want to give the guy the ball a lot and, you know, he's dependable. That's a good argument. And there's also, he has all those touches, but that, you know, that's going to wear a guy down over time. And, you know, is he going to be as effective year after year if he's touching the ball as many times? That's also a reasonable argument. This is not a clearly black and white argument about what to do with Le'Veon Bell. It's at what cost can you get a similar level of production? The thing I'll say is, you know, again, the stat that jumped out at me, which I hadn't seen before, was Le'Veon Bell had 3 runs over 20 yards with a long of 27, and he was 26th in the NFL in running backs of runs over 20 yards. So 25 or 26 guys had more runs of 20-plus yards than Le'Veon Bell.
Well, how many times have we talked about that, though?
Yeah, well, no, we've talked about the concept of it. But point two is also, you know, I know everybody talks about what a great route runner he is, and I'm not disputing that at all. But he still only averaged, you know, 7.7 yards a catch. And a lot of running backs averaged a lot more than that. So it's either how the Steelers are putting him into play as a receiver is, you know, not very good. Or maybe we're overblowing his route running capability. So either they're not using him right, or, you know, he's getting out there as a dump off to Ben and he doesn't really have the opportunity to then be a guy like Grant was yesterday to, you know, turn the Jets around the corner and get 20 yards. But it can't all be true. Just like we talk about the running game, it can't all be true that the offensive line's great, the offensive line coach is great, the running back's great, and you run for 4 yards a carry. That doesn't necessarily go together, and it's the same thing here when we talk about Le'Veon Bell as a receiver in my mind.
Well, they should use Le'Veon more in wheel situations. I mean, look at tremendous catch that he had and throw, you know, against the Jaguars. You know, he wasn't.
Yeah, he got split wide and scored the touchdown.
Right.
Is that what we're talking about? Is that the Ravens game? How about the one where he splits wide against the 20-yard touchdown where he runs a slant and then breaks the tackle at the goal line?
Right. Was that the Patriots or was that?
That was the Ravens. That was the Ravens.
Okay. But, I mean, yeah. And look, they used him a lot in empty sets this year, and he didn't get the football, right? You know, a lot of his how many of his catches were the choice route, you know, coming out of the backfield?
Out of 85, I would be surprised if it was more than 10.
Or just coming out of there and, you know, sitting down as kind of a dump-off option, those kind of things. Now, make no mistake, and we saw it against, you know, he is good with the football in his hand, you know, out in space. But as I pointed out several times, from the middle of the season on, him as a rusher this year was, his numbers were way down. You know, a successful run rates, first and 10. I even looked at him at yesterday, David, before the games got underway. I did a study on his first 5 carries of every game. Okay, first 5 carries. And that ended up, I think, being 75 total carries. And he had a 33% success rate there, which it was not good. And that's starting off games, you know. Look, is it his? You see all these backs in these games yesterday, they hit the hole, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, we know that's Fournette, Blount. I mean, that's what they do.
And then you have a guy, you know, picking and choosing in Le'Veon Bell. You know, that's I just wonder at times if they've caught up, you know, if defenses have sort of caught up some with being just as patient, you know, with his running style as his running style is when he approaches the line and all. So, you know, you got a big decision here to make in a couple of weeks. You know, are you going to franchise him and get one more year out of him, or you're going to get 1,800 total yards or whatnot out of them, and then let him fly, or are you going to let him fly and use that money? Look, you get for $14.54 million in cap space, you can go get you a couple of mix and match backs, if you will. You go get our buddy Giovanni Bernard, pay him a nice little contract. You could probably get one other guy in there.
Chris Ivory will be cut. I mean, Gio maybe Gio's not a cap casualty. Ivory's going to be a cap. You saw what the Jags did. Fournette, they have Yeldon. They have a – I'm drawing a blank on the kid's name. Sorry, Grant. Ivory doesn't even get a hat. He's making $5.5 million next year, so he's not going to be on the roster. You saw the Patriots, use three different backs. You see it just shows that there are other ways to do things. Fournette's the bell cow back, but they've got other backs that they can use. Steelers didn't have another back that they used all season long. That's the gist of it. I mean, Jay Conner touched the ball a few times. Ridley touched the ball in the Cleveland game a bunch of times when Bell didn't play. But the Steelers didn't use another back. There are other ways to get there. And, obviously the Saints were the most productive with two guys who just had off-the-charts numbers in Ingram and Kamara. But, is it time – again, it's hard for any of us to evaluate James Conner on what we saw. You wouldn't go into the season with James Conner being your lone sole guy. And so do you go find it in free agency and the draft and add to that and bring Stephen Ridley back. So you have four guys. I mean, the Patriots have a guy, Gillisley, whatever his name is, who doesn't dress for games. As I say, Ivory doesn't dress for games. You can have guys. You just have to figure out how you're going to allocate the money.
Yeah, Mike Gillisley, and he was big for them early in the season. Didn't he score like three touchdowns?
Yeah, he was going to be their short yardage back. And then they, Lewis and White and Burkhead have been good enough that they didn't need a guy like that.
And then people are saying, the Steelers ought to change which tag that they give to Bell. Well, look, I mean, it still comes with the same price tag, and yeah, one allows them to negotiate with other teams. How many teams do you think are would give up the draft picks?
None. Nobody's giving up two draft picks and paying Le'Veon Bell, two first round draft picks and paying Le'Veon Bell $15 million. Look, I don't know that there's anybody out there that's going to pay Le'Veon Bell $15 million. Maybe there is, but I'm not. Look, everybody just saw what happened in those championship games. None of those guys, nobody's getting more than $5 million. Granted, but we saw a bunch of guys in the league the last two or three years from the Todd Gurley draft on who have been dominant backs, from David Johnson to Zeke Elliott to Kamara to Hunt to, McCaffrey, all these guys. You're on your rookie deal, use the guys that make $1 million, $1.5 million. You can go find the production. You got to draft. You got to find the guys. But just I can't see a team going and looking at what's going on around the NFL and saying, I'm paying Le'Veon Bell $15 million. And then on top of that, two first-round draft picks? No chance. No chance.
A GM should be fired if he does that. Because also, too, once you deal for a guy like once you get a guy like that, David, obviously – well, this becomes extra on top of people saying, well, why not tag and trade him? Now, look, I definitely agree with your line of thinking. Nobody's going to touch, touch and give an offer sheet and then have to give up the draft picks on top of that. But then people are going to come back at you. I'm hearing some echo there. Hello. I'm going to, and then people are coming back at me and saying, well, why not just tag and trade him? Well, that sounds all great in theory, but you still have to A, clear the tag room for that, and B, you have the team to
find a partner.
You have to find a partner, and then on top of that, the team that trades for him, assuming he's still wearing a tag when you get him, then which he would. then they have to try to work out a deal with him, knowing that he's holding all the bargaining chips there, because they, you know, Bell and his agent will say, look, they just gave up a first rounder. They really got to give us, they got to get us under contract. They can't afford to give up that draft pick and then have us walk after 1 year.
Right, and they can't, if he signs the tag, they can't trade him, right? Once he signs the tag, he's untradeable for the season.
Oh, I have to look at that. I don't remember.
So I don't think they can sign him and move him.
Well, you can tag and trade.
Right, but once he signs the deal.
I'm trying to think how it worked out.
The nuance of the sequencing of things. But, yeah, so if you tag him, you're just holding his rights still effectively. And this is what, you know, this is what the Patriots were talking about doing with Malcolm Butler last year, when they didn't want to, you know, have to pay him this year. Was, you know, could they move him he was under contract. Now, Bell's not under contract. They can't trade him right now. He's a free agent.
Yeah, he's not. Well, his old contract's not expired. Yeah, I mean.
Right. When the football year ends, the Steelers can't move Le'Veon Bell. They have to make a decision, but Le'Veon Bell's a free agent.
Right. For all practical terms, right now, Bell is a free agent until they do something with the franchise tag. I just don't see people say, well, just sign Bell to a long term deal at a lower number before had to put a franchise tag on. He's going to use that franchise tag to his advantage. He wants the Steelers to put the franchise tag on him, because once again, we talk about this every time. Once you put that franchise tag on a player, you're telling the player that's what he's worth to you per year. Even though you might not deep down think that's essentially what you told him. That's why you very, very rarely see long-term deals to franchise tag players be lower than the actual tag amount, because you just told the player that that's what he's worth, you know, for one season. So, look, and as we kind of left it on the other podcast the other day, David, you can make good arguments to tag and not tag Bell right now.
As the more we get into this and you know, throwing in the not showing up for the Saturday walkthrough, you know, you assess the draft, you assess who's going to be available in free agency. I'm kind of leaning against it. I still think it's 50-50 what the Steelers do, but I'm kind of leaning toward going a different direction.
You know, and if he hadn't signed that tag, let's say you tag him and you get to the draft and he hadn't signed, you know, and odds are good, he probably not. Odds are good if you tag him, he's going to take the same course of action that he did last season. So that means not signing his tag. So, you could tag him, go to the draft, and let's say, you know, a surprise falls to you in the first couple rounds that you'd like and you think could be, you know, your number one back. Well, then you draft that player and you pull a Josh Norman with Le'Veon Bell, you know, pull the tag and say sayonara, and we'll gladly take the third round, you know, compensatory pick.
Yep. Your boy Rosie Nix going to the Pro Bowl.
Woohoo! At least I really like Rosie Nix. I mean, yes, he only plays, you know, 10 snaps a game on usually. Really good fullback and good special teams player to boot. So glad to see him get the recognition and go to the Pro Bowl there.
Yeah, so there will be – I didn't notice anybody pull out. As far as I can tell, Antonio Brown hasn't pulled out. So there will be 10 Steelers and the coaching staff. It will be a well-represented Steelers organization at the Pro Bowl.
Well, obviously Ryan Shazier not playing. He pulled out.
So, right. Not, sorry. 9. Yep.
All right. Daryl Drake. I got my wish, David. I told you, I said, look, I don't no offense to Hines Ward, great player, and maybe one at some point he's going to become a good wide receivers coach in this league. But I just could not fathom going from a guy like Richard Mann with 33 years coaching experience in the NFL to a guy with zero in Hines Ward. I could not fathom it, and that's why I was hoping the Steelers would go in a different direction and get a guy with experience. And oh boy, did they! They came to terms with Daryl Drake, the former wide receivers coach with the Arizona Cardinals, and you know, like it or not, he's developed some good little receivers over there. You know, outside of a guy named Larry Fitzgerald as well. Before he's with the Cardinals from 2013 to 2017. Prior to that, he was with the Chicago Bears from 2004 to 2012. Before that, he coached in college. In fact, he even was Hines Ward's wide receivers coach at Georgia, David, 1992 to 1996 there as well. Former NFL player in addition to that. So, look, I know a lot of people probably listening to this podcast were really wanting Hines Ward. I'm
not sure. I mean, I don't know if that's the case or not. I just don't understand the argument for it. Is because he was a good Steeler football player, you want to bring him back in the organization? Is that the argument?
That seems to be the argument.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those when people talk about I do laugh sometimes when even people say to me, well, you know, who would you take? Is look, this is Mike Tomlin's job. He knows all the guys around the league. He knows hundreds and hundreds of men in football that could be, you know, that he, you know, he's assessed over his time in the game that, you know, could be part of his coaching staff. So, you know, our world is limited to, you know, if you ask me or Dave right now off the cuff, who's the wide receiver coach for the Jags, we're probably not going to have the answer. I mean, maybe Dave does, but I certainly don't have it. I can't name the coaching staff, you know, the 12 guys for all 30 teams. I can't even, you know, start. So, you know, the idea that, you know, it's I get it, you know, because media people write, you know, Hines Ward was in working with the receivers. The receivers coach is no longer there. So let's draw the obvious connected dots. Hines Ward is a guy the Steelers could hire there. But it's not an inappropriate question to ask. It's just not a very deep line of thinking.
Keenan McCardle, but the only reason I knew that was because of the football life with Jimmy Smith recently, right? That's the Jaguars.
Good answer.
But
former Jags receiver.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, I'm with you. You know, this is. You know, Mike has generally, you know, for all intents and purposes, put good people around him and let him do the job. And so now the Steelers staff looks like it's set. So Randy gets named officially as OC and QB coach, which suggests they're not going to bring in a QB coach. And Todd Haley looks like he might be headed to Cleveland.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah. And which is kind of curious too, because you know Hugh Jackson is a guy that in the past has liked to call his own plays. You know, so you would think there would be a little bit of rub there. How much will Todd Haley? You know, if you bring him in, you hire him. Will he be your play caller? You know, will you stay out of?
I would think so. I mean, I think Jackson has said. And look, I mean, you got to do some things differently when you go, you know, 1-31. So I would assume if he gets the job, he will be given the reins.
Yeah. So that there'll definitely be some a few side stories to that. Should that ultimately look, he doesn't have many places he can land at this point, and you would think that he's probably going to land on his feet somewhere this next year. Talking about Todd Haley, so we'll see if that goes down in the next few weeks here. A couple of mock drafts already out. Daniel Jeremiah. Daniel Jeremiah? Well,
he had taken a corner, right?
Right. The kid out of LSU, right? Let me pull these up here real quick here while I got them in front of me.
Yeah, Mel Kiper had his, and obviously the big news was all the quarterbacks going at the top of the draft. He had Josh Allen of Wyoming going 1 to Cleveland. You know, look, Jeremiah had Darnold going 1 to Cleveland. I think it's pretty clear that everybody expects the Browns to take a quarterback at 1 this year after taking Myles Garrett last year. It's just which of the, if you want to throw Baker Mayfield in the conversation, somebody had Baker Mayfield going 1, I think, in one of the mocks this week. You know, he can be, you know, those are the four guys, Allen, Rosen, Darnold, and Mayfield. And then, you know, after that, you've got Randolph, from Oklahoma State, and then you've got Lamar Jackson from Louisville. All those guys could go in the first round.
All right, Mel Kiper Jr. had Alabama inside linebacker Rashawn Evans going to the Steelers at 28th overall. It's going to be interesting, and I've watched a little bit of tape on him already. Obviously, going to be diving into a lot of these guys a lot more deeper now. Kind of guy interested to see how he runs. To see if he is that kind of the elite. There's one thing that we learned, in the playoffs this time, or really this year, go back looking at Ryan Shazier and all. Athleticism, athleticism, athleticism. Look at Miles Jack, how athletic of a guy that is as well, too. If you got a guy that's going to play inside for you, he better be super athletic, be able to cover a lot of ground in a lot of time. So definitely interested in but the Steelers haven't drafted an Alabama player. Wow. Deshae Townsend? Was that?
Yeah, off the top of my head, I can't. Nobody's coming to mind.
Well,
they drafted a lot of SEC guys.
Yeah. Now they obviously show up down, every year at the pro day down there at Alabama and all like that. But they just haven't drafted Alabama players. Daniel Jeremiah. And look, I agree with if you get a very athletic playmaking inside linebacker, you're not going to get many complaints out of me with that being your number one selection this year. Daniel Jeremiah has the Steelers taken cornerback Dante Jackson out of LSU, a burner, probably going to be the fastest corner in the league. But the thing is, I get it and all. Not as big of a playmaker as you would probably like. More of a height, weight, speed guy than anything. And even the height, I think he's a 5'11", 175 pounds. That's, we'll see. In other words, I don't think when you look at the Steelers and their cornerback situation right now, David, with Artie Burns, Cameron Sutton, and Mike Hilton, and then a guy like, Brian Allen behind him in depth, and then, Joe Hayden, if you decide to retain him, to me, you're spending, if you're going to draft a guy number one, you're doing it because you want to be able to get him on the field. I just don't see how you draft any cornerback right now in the first round and be able to get him on the field ahead of guys like Hayden and Burns and Cameron Sutton and Mike Hilton. Now, obviously,
I think if you're taking a cornerback number, I don't think they will either. So let me just get that out there. If you're taking a cornerback number one, Joe Hayden is not on the team.
That would be the only way I could potentially see that happening is if you don't have Joe Hayden. And even then, I think it's a little bit of maybe a stretch there. Pro Football Focus has the Steelers taking the tight end out of South Dakota State, Dallas Goedert. But he is a little bit of an undersized height wise, at 6'3" and 2'8", that's you like those guys to be 6'4", 6'5", kind of guys there. So I think Pro Football Focus maybe has a Goddard ranked a little bit too high, if you will. And besides, once again, if you have Jesse, if you have Vance, and you have Xavier Grimble all under contract right now, and, of course, the most expensive of the bunch is Vance McDonald, and if he makes it past April 1st, he's going to be on your roster this year. To me...
Yeah, it's an either-or. If McDonald's back, you're not going there in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, we got two situations here with tight end and cornerback where we expect both Hayden, at least I do, expect both Hayden and Vance McDonald back. And if that's the case, I just can't see them going tight end or cornerback in the first round. Now, is there going to be the potential to get yourself a very athletic, free safety type late in this first round of this draft? Possibly. Is there going to be a chance to get a very athletic inside linebacker in the first round? Potentially an edge. Here's the thing, David, and I wanted to save a little bit of time for this at the end of this podcast. you know, if we learned anything now about Edges and the Steelers and even factoring in James Harrison, you have to get the players on the field that give you the best chance of production and play, be damned where they were drafted, okay? And you can do that nowadays with how cheap, really, basically, you know, the salaries are, okay? I mean, if you know by the middle of the season of his third season, you know, Bud Dupree should be in a certain position, you know. He should be doing certain things for you. And I guess the long and short of it is, you know, even if you decide to pick up the fifth-year option on Bud Dupree here in the coming months, it's not a slam dunk to happen either way. But if you do, you know, you're not married to him. It does not prevent you, I don't think, from going out there and drafting an edge in the first round of the draft. And if that guy can beat out Bud Dupree during training camp, well, then that's the route that you go, and then you just rip away that fifth-year option from Bud Dupree. You know, they got to do a better job with their edge players, not only playing against the run, but they got to be able to get these guys, you know, especially in Bud Dupree's situation, of doing more than just being a up the arc kind of edge rusher and being more than just getting hustle sacks, if you know what I mean.
Yep. Well, we saw Fowler in the, you know, very first series of that game come off the edge and just blow by whoever the right tackle was.
Cameron Fleming.
Cameron. Okay, so a little breaking news. Dick LeBeau out as defensive coordinator with Mike Vrabel named the new head coach. You know, look, they have a connection back from their Steeler days, and both Ohio State grads, I think. So, you know, wouldn't have been a complete shock if Dick LeBeau had been retained with their relationship, but he's out, and I have to think this is the end of the line. Now, he could certainly be have a consulting role for any team, but I would be shocked if there are not many jobs open, and I'd be shocked if somebody brought Dick LeBeau in as an 80-year-old defensive coordinator. But, you know, it's been a Hall of Fame. It's been remarkable is too light a word, but that's the latest. That's the latest on that front.
Are you surprised they went with him as a head coach?
Look, he's not the most experienced guy, but I do know he's a very smart guy, and I'm always a big fan of the he's a smart guy who's played under some smart guys. Obviously, he went from the Steelers to the Patriots, and then I was down with Bill O'Brien down in Houston. I assume he impressed. So I'm not I think from the pedigree or the experience level, I can see why people might be surprised. But if you know his background and know a little bit about the guy, I don't think it's all that surprising. It's a little bit like Sean McVay.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised there that Vrabel, you know, got the job there. But we're gonna see. A couple weeks away now from a couple of Patriots assistants. You know, both of them leaving the Patriots. What do you think about what's going to happen there in with the Giants?
I'll just throw one thing out: is if the Steelers are fortunate enough down the road to, you know, get in the spot, realize that, you know, look, I don't think Pat Schumer's situation cost the Vikings, just like I don't think the situation with both the or three of the Patriots, two coordinators and a linebackers coach, impacted their play. Guys can have an interview and it's not a huge distraction to the team, and, you know, they can still do their job and go out there and function and all of that. So, yeah, Pat Schumer goes to the Giants. That maybe surprised me a little bit more than some of these other ones. Patricia's to the Lions. And it looks like, I don't know, Josh McDaniel is going to Indy most likely, right? That's going to be the last one.
Yeah, and I guess we have to figure out who's going to Arizona, right?
Yeah, that's the open job right now. That's the one that really there hasn't And if I'm Arizona here at this point, look, I understand this is an important time of year, but the thing that always amuses me is when teams go forward and they interview five or six guys. If you have to interview 50 guys and it takes you an extra week at this point, go do it. Get the right guy. Make sure you turn over every stone. I think that's, how the Steelers, like him or not, how the Steelers got Mike Tomlin. And I think, you do your homework on this stuff. Learn something about your team as well in the process.
And I guess Jack Del Rio be going to the Giants to be their defensive coordinator is the last I kind of heard.
Yeah, there. Makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense there. And the Giants are going to try to rebuild around potentially Eli Manning. Either that or they're just saying the right things.
Yeah, and you would think, I think they draft second, you would think they will also take a quarterback. So you got a last year or so of Eli, and then you've got the heir apparent, a little bit like the Kurt Warner, Eli Manning situation when he came on board.
Well, then they also got that kid that they drafted last year, the quarterback too.
The kid from Cal, Davis. Is that
Davis Webb? Yeah.
Yeah, it's Cal. Yeah, Davis Webb. Right. Yeah, I don't know. I guess if they feel like Davis Webb is an answer, then you don't have to do that. You can go wherever you want it to, or you can trade out and get a bunch of assets.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I have a feeling that they don't go quarterback. I think what you do is if you're going to go the next couple seasons with Eli, with your wagon tied to Eli, I try to trade out of that spot and pick up some picks here is what I try to do. So we'll see. Long way away from that. Okay, it is now Senior Bowl week, and Alex Cazorra is headed down to my old stomping grounds of Mobile, Alabama, and he'll be filing reports for the rest of this week. And then obviously the Senior Bowl game will follow on Saturday, and then woohoo, we have the Pro Bowl game coming up, and this will be, of course, Pro Bowl week on top of that. And then we get into media week with the Super Bowl and all. So in short, barring any kind of, I guess, breaking news, David, I think all we're going to see Steeler-wise is maybe some futures contracts be signed here in the coming days as they start working towards filling out their 90-man roster and all. But why don't we take Wednesday off, David, or plan to take this Wednesday off, and then come back at it on Friday and mop up anything that's out there, unless there is something breaking that you and I have to get back together on Wednesday.
Sounds good.
All right. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com and hitting that donate button in the upper right navigational bar. And if you follow me on Twitter, hey, it's off season. I need your help. Retweet some of our posts that go out there on the Twitter machine with it dying down a little bit here this time of off season. That's all I got, David. And unless something happens, I will talk to you on Friday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.